Rollover crashes are depressingly commonplace these days. They happen on freeway off-ramps and roundabouts and surprisingly gentle curves on highways. Just the slimmest of margins exist between a safe speed in a curve and a speed where a truck is likely to flip over onto its side. And we see similar problems on downhill descents with heavy loads, too. Poor driving technique and a lack of understanding of vehicle dynamics often combine to cause crashes, sometimes with catastrophic results. Brian Bullock, the founder and principal of RoadAware Safety Systems, has been studying these types of crashes for years. He believes they're almost always entirely preventable. In just a moment, Brian will explain what causes these types of crashes and how they can be avoided. Stay with us. Brian Bullock of RoadAware, thanks so much for joining us today on HTT Talks Trucking. Good to have you aboard, my friend. Well, I've been following RoadAware for a couple of years now. It started a while back when I think I did a story on mountain driving, and you responded to it favorably. Thank you. With some insights about some of the research work you've been doing on bad mountain driving behavior. So I wonder if we could start this conversation just by introducing us to RoadAware, what you do and why you do it, and what the ultimate advantages might be for fleets who decide to take it up.
Thanks, Jim. I started this a few years ago thinking about how do we help the drivers manage these very large loads in difficult geometries. And I could see that better data was going to become available, that we had low-cost GPS, low-cost processing systems, and I felt that if we used a driver-in-the-loop approach, where the driver becomes part of the solution, that we could manage better behavior in most difficult geometries. So a few years ago, we got a prototype system, and we've been testing it in Colorado and Arizona, mountainous terrain, as you know, and primarily focused on prevention of rollover crashes and prevention of runaways. And happily enough, I've had lots of positive interactions with drivers, and they've responded well to this additional tools, and we've been able to see a lot safer behavior happening within a couple of fleets that we've been working with here locally. And so our goal is to have a national release where it'll be available across the entire U.S. Early next year.
It sounds like an obvious and easy question, but why is mountain driving in this particular case? We'll talk about the rollover incidents in a minute. But why is it such a big problem? I mean, do drivers fundamentally not understand how to descend long grades with heavy loads? I think we've seen plenty of evidence of that out in the highways. But you think with a fleet that's got dedicated service in terrain like that, the drivers might be a little bit more up on their game?
Yeah, you know, there's a little bit of both there, Jim. I just recently attended a safety meeting in Colorado where they do find that the majority of their mountain crashes are happening with out-of-state drivers. And part of the problem is drivers that have not had experience in severe terrain come into mountains the first time and they don't recall what their CDL training was, and probably none of them have ever taken a high school physics class, and so they don't understand the huge amount of potential energy when an 80,000-pound truck is at the top of a 1,000-foot descent. That's 10 times more energy than a truck has at 60 miles an hour, and you've got to dissipate that carefully, otherwise you absolutely will burn your brakes out.
Well, most drivers, I would guess, sometime in their career have experienced something called brake fade, where the brakes just don't seem to work quite as well as they used to, and they've certainly smelled hot brakes. But is there a disconnect between what happens to brakes, or do drivers even understand what happens to brakes when they get hot? I mean, we have, you know, expansion of the brake drum. We have excessive travel of the push rod. We have degradation of the brake linings. This is all happening simultaneously. So you got three things working against the driver on a long hill. That, to me, is fundamental and should be taught in driving school, CDL school. To the best of your knowledge, is that mountain driving covered in that sort of depth?
It's not, unfortunately. I just had a friend go through CDL school here in Arizona. He had a 20-year career in law enforcement and wanted to have another career in driving. So he approached it with a bias towards safety because he'd seen so many crashes on the highways during his years in law enforcement. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, there was no instruction about safe driving in mountains. They were not taken even for half a day, even though the mountain are right here next to Phoenix. So I think there's a real disconnect. I don't think drivers are taught that not only is there a huge amount of energy that needs to be dissipated, but as you heat up your brake pads, as you just said, you get expansions, brake drums, and so on. The decrease in brake effectiveness, if you just look at temperature versus brake effectiveness, at kind of 600 to 700 degrees, depending on the brake composition, it just plummets down. Mm-hmm. It's not a gradual decay. It plummets down. And as a result, you go from 70 or 80% brake effectiveness to 10 or 15% in just another 50 degrees. So wow. It makes it extremely dangerous. And I would love to work together with HDDT to try and get improved training regarding mountain driving into CDL schools.
Well, that's shocking that even in Arizona, where the mountains exist, they're not training new drivers in the mountains. I can understand it in places like Nebraska and Kansas and, you know, New York State, where there aren't huge hills to practice on. But my God, what about Colorado? Do they do any mountain training in their driving schools there? I hope they do. Guess it depends on the school.
They do not.
That's mind-boggling.
You know, part of the problem is drivers are trying to get qualified, get their CDL, get on the road so they can start making money. And trucking companies are not insisting on any kind of mountain training before they put them on the road. And as a result, it gets overlooked. You know, you went out and personally drove with Andy Roberts out in British Columbia, and so you experienced what it's like to tackle those huge descents. And almost every driver I've talked to, the only way they've figured that out themselves is they've either listened to other drivers talk about it, or they've had that gut-wrenching moment where they're going down a hill too fast and all of a sudden their brakes were not affected.
Mm-hmm. That experience with Andy Roberts you mentioned, we filmed a series of mountain driving instruction videos. And part of the program there was me piloting a truck 104,000 pounds down this long 7 mile, 6% grade without touching the brake pedal. That was the purpose of it, to prove that it, well, not to prove it could be done, but to illustrate how to do it. And we got to the bottom of those grades and the brakes were still cold to the touch. Never touched them. It's not impossible. It's a matter of being taught how to do it, I think.
That's exactly right. I mentioned your experience and my caution to this friend of mine. And his first driving jobs were just around the valley here where it's flat. Mm-hmm. But then he was asked to do a trip up into the mountains. And he remembered what I had said, that, you know, do these descents with your feet on flat on the floor. Don't touch your service brake. Mm-hmm. And his first descent, he was able to do it properly. He got it in the right gear and the right speed range. He kept his speed under control and successfully got to the bottom of the hill without ever touching the service brake.
So tell me then, what does RotoWare do? It's a device, it's an app, I suppose, you can put on your phone or on a tablet. But how does that help a driver during a long descent? What's going on there?
Well, first of all, it is an app that you can use on a smartphone or on a tablet. By next year, we hope to be able to release that as part of an ELD ecosystem, so that you don't have to have a separate device. It'll just run in the background on an ELD. What's specific about it is it knows the elevations. So it uses a 3D road set, not a 2D road set. It knows the slopes. But in addition to that, we insert the braking horsepower of the engine and the weight of the load. Because those are the two factors that have to be in the system in order for it to calculate a safe
speed. Does the driver manually enter that, or is it somehow extrapolated from various sensors on the truck?
With an integrated system, it eventually will be able to detect it off the CAN bus. But right now, the driver has four simple inputs. He chooses his tractor, and he chooses what his engine brake setting is. He has to say, is it off, medium, low, medium, high? And then he chooses his load, and everything else is calculated for him. And then he gets a green, yellow, red sequence. So about 1,000 feet before the hill, it'll say you're coming up on a descent, and it'll show a recommended speed for specific to his truck and to that location.
Okay.
And then as he gets closer, it'll turn yellow, and he'll get an audible warning. Recommended safe speed is 32 miles per hour. And if he doesn't slow down to that speed, it'll turn red. And meanwhile, it's recording his speeds. And so he'll get an upload to the cloud and a trip summary at the end of the trip, like many other systems do now. But what's unique about our system is it's not comparing against posted speeds. It's comparing against a recommended safe speed for that very truck and that very descent.
Now, is this a tool that fleets can use too to monitor driver performance and ultimately coach drivers on improper or incorrect behavior?
Exactly. We're doing exactly that with two different companies here in Arizona. And we've had the opportunity to work with a lot of drivers. And I can tell you that drivers want to be safe. They don't want to be a problem. And nobody's out there trying to be dangerous. And whether they have been relatively new or whether they've been driving for 25 years, when we explain to them and show them real data and what's safe behavior, what's risky behavior, I haven't had anyone tell me I was crazy. And I've had lots of thanks for helping them. Last year, we had one terminal with about 100 drivers in it. And the manager asked us to coach the single riskiest driver. And we put the system in. And within a few days, he changed from being a risky driver. He went from worst to first and became a top driver. And he thanked his manager. He said, I didn't know that I was risking my life and other lives. And he said, I'm so grateful to know. And he maintained that change in behavior for 5 months that we had records on him.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've seen it happen. Then they socialize with their friends at the terminal. And so we see the whole fleet drivers also improving in driving behavior.
But the fleets must have to coach or train the drivers on A, how to descend the hill, and then B, what road aware the tablet is showing them in the cab, kind of bring the two components together.
Yeah. You know, Jim, we used your video. I think it's one of the best ones out there. And
thank you.
So every driver's asked to watch those videos. And I was glad that you broke it up into four segments. That was very smart. You know, it's an instant a course on proper mountain behavior. And so just the fact that somebody's taking the time to pay attention to them, to give them a new tool, to help them and coach them, drivers respond positively to that. And they find out that, hey, this is only adding 3 minutes to my descent. And now, instead of being at risk of overheating my brakes, I know that I never am going to overheat my brakes. And if a soccer mom pulls out in a minivan in front of me at the bottom of the hill, I'm going to be able to stop.
We're going to spend the next few minutes talking about rollovers, another vehicle dynamic situation, not dissimilar to descending hills, but it's a situation where the vehicle stability threshold is exceeded for one reason or another. Brian, can you give us a bit of background on how rollovers occur and, you know, how many of them we see around the country every year?
Rollovers are actually much more common than a runaway. They happen frequently. Most often you'll see them on connector ramps, exits, roundabouts, sometimes even on gentle curves when the driver is pulling an unstable load, for example, a livestock trailer. Those are very unstable loads. And tankers. They tend to be less consequential in a lot of times of single vehicle. However, if you look at the national statistics, about 21% of large truck crashes are single vehicle crashes. And the other concerning thing is that rollovers are often fatal for the driver. There's just so much energy being dissipated that there's a high rate of fatality for the driver. So drivers have a vested interest in managing their vehicles in curves, connector ramps, other geometry where the side force on the trailer is going to put the vehicle at risk.
Well, again, we have what I would call a driver training or driver awareness issue. Every load is different, so you really can't, you know, get into the physics for every load you're hauling. But do drivers understand, do you think, generally that, you know, taller, you know, loads with higher centers of gravities are sort of more susceptible to this kind of behavior? Or does that come as a surprise to them?
I think they do, Jim. I don't think they understand the magnitude and the fact that the overturning force varies as the square of the speed, not directly with speed, but the square of the speed. So a doubling of speed on the same curve is four times the overturning force.
Oh. Okay.
And I don't think they're aware of that.
No.
I do think that they understand that liquid loads, loads that can move and shift, are inherently tippier than a stable load. But they don't also know that their tractor is about twice as stable as an average load. Say, most tractors can take 0.7, 0.8 Gs in a corner and not roll.
Mm-hmm.
Trailers, on the other hand, will roll at 0.3 Gs.
Oh, that's quite a difference.
The other thing they don't realize is that a driver feels fairly comfortable at 0.2 to 0.3 Gs. If you go into the mountains and watch people driving their passenger cars, they'll drive them curves at speeds that produce 0.3 to 0.35 Gs. After that, it gets a little uncomfortable. You're pushing and moving around.
Mm-hmm.
So that means that the truck driver is not getting much seat of the pants feel when that trailer is already unstable. And so by the time he gets any seat of the pants feel, it's probably beyond recovery. And that is why we are providing with RotoWear an advance warning to have the driver slow down before he gets to the curve. And then we provide enough headroom in the calculated safe speed that if he has to make any kind of an adjustment or maneuver during the curve, there's still headroom there and he won't roll the truck.
I can tell you from experience, back in the day when stability control systems were just coming onto market, all the suppliers had demonstrations for journalists. We went out with trailers without riggers on them and drove the truck around. And we were told that the truck was perfectly safe. It would not roll over. But if the outriggers did come in contact with the ground, then that would be the ultimate extension of that would have been a rollover incident. And I can tell you that I had no idea that that trailer was going to tip. We did it deliberately to get the feel and be dramatic and have the wheels touch the ground and everything. But I can tell you, absolutely, you cannot tell from the seat of your pants, and it always starts with the trailer, that once that starts, there's no coming back. You can't bring it back to the ground, and you don't even know it's rolling over until you're beyond that point of no return.
Exactly right. And the margins are really small, Jim. There's a set of roundabouts on US 93 near Phoenix at a small town called Wickenburg. And the safe drivers go through there, those roundabouts, at 15 miles an hour. The risky drivers going through at 20. Now, that's only a 5 mile an hour difference.
That's not much.
But the tip over threshold speed is 23. At that point, you're right on the edge. And we've coached a number of drivers where we ask them, you know, do you really want to be driving within 2 miles an hour of the tip over threshold? And none of them do, but they were totally unaware that they were that close. And so once we explained to them, and it's just really heartwarming to see them all slow down to 15 miles an hour. And how much additional time does that take? 20 seconds?
It's not going to make or break your day. So how does RotoWear work then? I guess similar to a hill on a descent where you get the green, yellow, red warning on the screen. Is that the principle there?
Yes. And of course, with the curve speeds, it's less to do with the weight of the trailer and it's more to do with the height of the center of gravity. And so we have to insert the type of trailer so that we know, you know, if it's flatbed hauling rebar, you can go through that thing will hold, you know, 0.45 or 5 Gs, 0.5 Gs. But if it's a dry van fully loaded with soda or something like that, Coors beer, for example, there's lots of those rollovers in Denver. Then your center of gravity is halfway between your flat deck and the top of that vehicle. It's high. And so your tip over threshold in G-forces is about 0.25 or 0.22. And you really have to be careful. I saw a rollover on Interstate 15 in Utah, which I've driven that road many times, and I thought, man, there's no curve there sharp enough to cause a rollover. And the curve radius was 1,200 feet, and sure enough, for a livestock load, the tip-over speed was 57 miles per hour. And he rolled that thing right on top of a Nissan riding behind him. There's three guys in the Nissan. Fortunately, they all ducked, and they avoided being hurt, but they were trapped under a bunch of panicked cows for an hour.
I can imagine what happened in there. Yuck.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. I'll bet that driver was, well, I'll say, I'll bet nobody was more surprised than that driver when the truck went over.
He had no idea it would roll at that speed. And so, you know, that's another area where I think just a small additional set of training. Just as you experienced when you went out and purposely drove on a test vehicle without riggers. If we can just have a few more videos and a little more training, I think we can really make a change on that type of trainer.
Well, I think you said it earlier. At the driving school level, everybody's in a hurry to get through the program as quickly as they can, get their CDL and get out working. I don't know really from any personal experience how much time fleets spend in orientation with new drivers, but I would hope that some going back over the fundamentals of driving dynamics and vehicle handling and what have you would be part of that orientation training. Perhaps not, but my impression today, and I could be wrong here and I stand to be corrected, is that fleets are far more interested in grabbing some kind of technological solution to a problem than going back to some of the fundamentals, simply because it's less expensive, a little bit easier maybe. Do you have any thoughts on that? You're trying to sell a product into this market. Are they happy to see you come to their door? Or do you advise them to go back and maintain the training fundamentals as well as bringing your technology to bear on the problem?
Safety has to be a holistic solution. You know, there has to be buy-in by the CEO, the CFO, the safety managers, and it needs to include training, needs to include new tools, needs to include daily safety reminders, recurrent training, and I'm a big believer that we have an opportunity here to really make some significant changes in the industry through a combination of new technology, better teaching, and better training, better online resources like the videos that you did on descents. I'd love to see you do a set on curves and horizontal geometries and those kinds of tools, I think, can make a huge difference.
Well, Brian, I think we've got a long ways to go yet before we can call ourselves over the problem. I'm glad you're making a contribution to it and trying to safen things up a little bit for everybody. And you know, if anybody wants to know more about what you're doing, where can they find out some more information and maybe get hold of you?
Just jump on our website, www.rotaware.com. There's videos there, there's technical papers, and there's a contact point that you can get a hold of us. I'm pleased to see that probably by Q1, if we're going to be out there with a national solution, it won't be just regional anymore. And we're talking to large fleets, we're talking to insurance companies, and I think we're going to see actual cost savings come by using a tool like this, that you can pay $100 for the tool but save $1,000 in insurance costs. So I think that's coming next year.
Well, we'll put links to your site and some of those resources at the bottom of the show notes here, so folks can click on them after they watch the video. Brian Bullock, thanks you so much for coming on to HTT Talks Trucking and sharing that with us. I think it'll be a really useful exercise and get people thinking about some of their driving habits in tricky conditions. Thank you, sir. I've been speaking with Brian Bullock, the founder and principal of RoadAware Safety Systems, LLC. Brian joined us from his home in Phoenix, Arizona. And once again, we have links in the show notes below to some of the resources Brian mentioned and to the mountain driving course we referred to. If you like what you see here on HTT Talks Trucking, please tell your friends and coworkers about us, and don't forget to poke that subscribe button. Check out our other social media channels too. We're on Twitter, LinkedIn, and Facebook. And check out the digital version of HTT. You'll find tons of great trucking industry content at truckinginfo.com. I'm Jim Park. Thanks for watching.